Hello everyone, hope you're all doing well. Just a thought I had is if you're feeling like bad in the day in yourself, just focus on getting through it and just make sure if you can put some work in to help you to get stuff done and be productive out of the day. Because for me, like today, I don't feel like good at all, and I know because I've had it so many times, like there's nothing I can do about it. I just have to focus on getting through it and just getting on with work. I'll probably feel alright again in like 4 or 5 hours or something, but for now I'm just getting on with just keeping my like self busy and not occupied with other things. And if you can get out, just get out and go and see people when you feel like this. But I just thought I'd share that because I know there's someone out there that's having the exact same thing and needs to hear it. But I enjoyed doing this video and I love doing wood stories, and I got more of these coming. So I hope you have a great day and I'll speak to you soon. The story I'm going to share with you took place in the North Pole, Alaska, May 20. The incident I'm going to describe was the wrong place, wrong time, and completely unprovoked. Another note, I was still only 20 when this incident occurred, and could not legally own a pistol yet. Also, I was in the army, and if you live in the barracks, you have to keep your weapons in the arms room. So it's not like it's convenient to get that out and carry it, as compared to a guy living off post who can keep his gun in his safe or in his closet. Anyway, it's on the night of Cinco de Mayo 20. I attended a party at a friend's house in the North Pole, AK. North Pole is about 20 or 30 minutes outside of Fairbanks. It is a somewhat rural area and community. Lots of houses are acre or 1 or 2 acre lot, mostly dirt roads off of the main roads. I was designated driver that drove 4 of my friends, but 3 of the friends as I brought decided that they're going to spend the rest of the night at that person's house instead of going back to the barracks. Only one friend that wasn't drinking a lot decided he wanted to go back to the barracks when I was ready to go. We ended up leaving at about 1:30 a.m. As we're pulling out in the front gate, I got a call that there had been a fight at the party. They said that after the fight, everyone was going home instead of staying the night and continued drinking. They said to me, "Can you come back and pick them up?" but said they had to go in a different friend's house that lived in the same area because everyone had to leave after the fight. Well, the GPS doesn't work that well once you get out of Fairbanks and aren't on the main roads. You could get in the general area, but not the exact location. When we went to the address that was given, it came up as being in the middle of the road, so we took a turn down a side road to turn around and try and get service so that we could make a call to figure out where the house was. By this time it's around 2:30 a.m. As we turn down the road, there's an old red minivan with fog lights mounted on the top just idling there with two guys that looked to be in their late 20s. I remembered thinking that it looked like something you'd see in a TV show or horror movie. Just a creepy looking van, especially at 3 a.m. in the morning. We had to pass them to turn around, and they looked at us in a way that really gave us a bad feeling. So we turned around and then had to pass them again to pull out onto the main road. As we passed them, the driver was leaning in his head and had it out of the window partially, like he wanted us to stop and say something. Being it's almost 3 a.m, we know it's best to keep driving. My friend wasn't able to get a hold of anyone, so he tried mapping it out again. The GPS was delayed due to poor signal, and we missed our turn again. We saw a small clearing to pull over, so we decided to pull over to the side of the road to verify where we're going. About 10 seconds later, the red minivan with fog lights pulled up next to us on my side and rolls down the windows. I roll down my window, and they initiate conversation saying have we seen a white pickup Dodge truck. We say we hadn't, and they say, "Alright, thanks." We then asked if they knew where Meadow Rue was, the street we're looking for. They said it's on the first street on the left, if we headed back the way we come. We were suspicious, but when we looked at the GPS, it showed that this is on the road that we're on. We now start heading towards Meadow Rue, which is about half a mile away, and saw them pull out and start heading that way behind us. We made the turn into what we thought was Meadow Rue, and this road is a bumpy dirt road and immediately forks off into two directions. One side goes straight up and the other goes up a hill. The other is to the side and left that drops down about 2 feet and flattens out. We turn left and drop down the small incline. The road was narrow, only big enough for one car, and lined with trees on both sides for a good distance. Now the first thing we notice here is a dead end sign, and that's getting us a bit worried. We drove about 20 feet and then we see the minivan with fog lights turn in, dropping behind us. At this point, my blood goes cold and I feel a sinking feeling in my stomach. At this point, I know they're following us. I try to be positive and hoping for a split second that they're just going to turn back and go away from us. But then I saw them speeding up again. Now, this is a bumpy dirt road and there's no reason to be going fast. I started speeding off and to that, they slammed into the back of my car, backed off and ran me again. A few seconds later, we made it to a small clearing like a dirt cul-de-sac. I had enough room to pull forward and then reverse, so that I'm facing the direction I've come in. While I'm doing this, they stopped and blocked the road on the one-lane dirt road. They hop out of the car and one shouts, "This ain't Meadow Rue, idiot. Get out of the car." The one guy had positioned himself directly in front of my car, about 10 to 15 feet away between the trees and his van. The other guy started walking up to my passenger side where my friend is, and they kept shouting at us to get out, but I'd gone it. And the guy just stood there. I'm trying to run him over. He managed to jump out of the way. I thought for sure there wasn't enough room for us between his van and the trees and figure we're going to get stuck, but we have no guns and that's not a better choice. I thought we'd have to bail out and run into the woods and hide, but to my surprise, we got through. It was such a tight fit that both my mirrors collapsed in. I now speed out of there, getting off the main road going home. Now I saw a state trooper not long before this, and I really want to see them again. I was scared to death of being chased again and then run off the road at higher speeds. So instead of slowing down, I blew past the state trooper doing 90 and a 45. Since that is extreme speeding, I thought it'd get the trooper's attention, but for whatever reason it didn't. There was only one turn on the whole way back, and when I slowed down to make it, the van's nowhere in sight. I still flew back at 90 miles per hour just to be safe. The next day, we try and tell our friends what happened, and no one believes us. Not one freaking person. They thought we didn't feel like driving all the way back, so we made up a story. The guy who had invited us over originally said, "If we're serious, we needed to file a police report with the Alaskan State Troopers." So we went to file a police report at the state trooper's office in town. We filled out a report. After giving our story to the trooper, he told us to wait and he then left the room. About 15 minutes later, he came back in and told us to tell the truth. Confused, we say, "What do you mean?" He said the theory is that we're too drunk, driving around late after Cinco de Mayo, and we plowed into the van. He said he thought the owner heard that happened and then came out to confront us. We repeatedly tell him that this isn't the case, and sadly we don't have evidence, but he doesn't either and lets us go. The next day, we check the area and show him on the map. I guess when he didn't find a wrecked car, he knew we're probably telling the truth. He said to meet him again and verify the area, but we told him we didn't want to go near there. After 2 weeks, he called us again to come in and ID the vehicle. He shows us a picture of a minivan, and I'm sure this is the one we saw, but I can't really know for certain. Now to this day, no one really believes my story. They think we did it just to provoke the incident, or we just made it all up to sound cool. But this did happen, and it's just a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Let's start with a little backstory. I'm a 24-year-old female that fell in love with national parks. So much so that I decided to work full-time at one for about 3 years. This experience allowed me to meet some great people, but also welcomed some sketchy individuals. This particular story starts with a man that we'll call Sam. Sam was a tall man with a shaved head and glasses. He was a kind of co-worker that would always linger awkwardly. He made everyone feel uncomfortable, but not enough to warrant concern. The only issue that I really noticed was that he seemed to like drinking a lot. He would show up to work still drunk, and be sent home because of it somewhat regularly. He seemed innocent enough though, in a socially awkward way. Like, he was fine, just always panicky. I only worked with him for a few months before I'm transferred to a new location. A few months after starting the new position, I was in the employee break room browsing my newsfeed when I get 5 new messages in 3 minutes. I didn't even realize people could type that fast. The messages are from Sam. Something caught me off guard because I never spoken to him outside of my last position. The messages consisted of vague threats regarding my friends and myself. He seemed upset to find out that I had gay friends and thought that I was trained, but tainted from association. I was less upset at his foul perception of me, and more annoyed that he targeted my friends, who are truly lovely. I am bad when it comes to taking the high road and decide to give him a piece of my mind. We weren't friends. I mean, hardly acquaintances. So I didn't feel that his behaviour was appropriate, and I quite frankly was angry. Through our exchange, the original rude context of the messages became obviously threatening. He told me I should go and die with my friends, and that he'd be happy to see our misery. I'm shocked. His anger didn't make sense to me. And I've realised that I wasn't going to be the reason that this lunatic ended up getting to HR. We worked within the same company, so I think my best route to prevent further harassment is this. HR advised me to block contact from him while they investigate, but also alert the authorities in case he acts out on his threats. Authorities are involved and are not fazed by the messages. They almost seem annoyed that I bothered them. I fill out a statement and was told to contact them if it progresses. The next day, I woke up to find trash all over my front steps. This is odd, but not too strange. I actually thought it's a raccoon since I'm in a national park. I then saw a piece of paper though with some words on it next to it. It says, "Watch your back." I look around, see the other neighbouring cabins, but nobody's watching. I clean up the mess but save the note. I wanted to show my sister who lived with me. When she got back home later that morning, I called her up on the previous night's events. She didn't even know Sam because, like I said, we're not friends. Why would I mention him in my personal life? I mean, God. I gave her a brief description of him in case she saw him lurking around and headed to work. Halfway throughout my shift, I get a phone call from Alexa. She sounds shaken when she tells me that a man matching Sam's description came to our cabin asking where I was. She plays dumb and pretended to not even know me. He then says, I'll be back later, and walks away. She said he sounded and acted like he'd been heavily drinking, and had some intense coldness to him, like he could just kill and not care about it. I'm not messing around at this point, and I've watched enough crime shows to know that you shouldn't underestimate someone. So I call the company's security team and ask to have someone check out on my sister and for her to be escorted home immediately. I'm home within 20 minutes of her phone call. She gave me some security information and they're able to find out which cabin he resided in. And great for me, it's only a 2-minute walk down our street, which is really unnerving. Park rangers are called again, and they get more statements from the both of us and decide to pay him a visit. They seem to be taking the situation more seriously now that he knows where I live. They come back after talking to his roommate. It's confirmed that he lives there, but he hasn't been home since the night before. Authorities put a word out to keep an eye out for Sam. They offer to have a unit keep an eye out for us, which we gladly accept and go to sleep. I then wake up to 34 messages from an unknown number. It's Sam again. He got very angry that HR and Rangers were involved. He said, "You're gonna pay for this. You mess with the wrong person, I'm gonna end you." I email HR, presenting them screenshots of this. And I demand they resolve this immediately. I want to set up a meeting with our directors to discuss termination. See in National Parks. You're hired and the company provides cheap housing on site. And when you're fired, you have to leave the National Park within 24 hours. So I thought this would be a resolution to the majority of my problems. They seem to agree with me and try to locate Sam for a meeting. No one has seen him since the first messages began 2 days prior, so the park's on a manhunt. The park is huge, and it's easy to hide in if you don't want to be found. Thankfully for me, his roommate alerted officials when he stumbled in drunk the next day. They're able to speak with him sober, and get him into the HR building a couple of hours later. After the meeting, I'm mortified that he's been given a first and final write-up and will continue to work and live on my street. He's apparently given a sob story about his personal issues and promises to leave me alone. I was baffled that, even with him threatening to kill me, they aren't gonna fire him. Thankfully, the Rangers are equally surprised and still offer surveillance just in case. I was quiet for 3 days. I thought it was actually over, and started feeling bad for him. I thought maybe he was going through stuff, and I was just his mental punching bag. I didn't agree with it, but I no longer felt as threatened, if that makes sense. This is until I get a knock on my door and find two rangers wanting to speak with me. According to the rangers, a few people from the HR department, Sam's roommate, had to call the emergency line when he started acting bizarre after the meeting, and tried to convince him to lure me to a secluded place so Sam could take care of me. Thankfully, his roommate wasn't a psycho and reported the situation immediately once Sam went to the bathroom. Rangers were on site within minutes and had him restrained in order to search a cabin. They ended up finding a loaded firearm and suspected suicide note that stated he was going to kill me, then himself. There was also enough evidence found to ban him from all national parks. I have since moved to a different one and changed my contact info. He has since contacted me once to brag about how much I helped him secure unemployment benefits, which I quirkly shared to officials. According to officials, he is restricted to a southern AZ county due to other crimes that he later committed. As for HR, the director had to deal with harassment from Sam after the banning and asked me to testify on his behalf. I haven't heard anything since. I don't understand why he targeted me. We hadn't had very many interactions even at work. I have tried to dig through memories to find a single time that I may have invented or invited this kind of behavior, but I'm convinced it wasn't me, it was him. I hope I never see him again. A number of years ago, I was up in the northern end of BC, in the islands out by Port Hardy. I set up camp right by the beach close to the shore, did the normal catch a fish and cook it for dinner over my campfire. It's pretty perfect really. A few hours pass and it's getting dark. I climbed into the tent and fall asleep quickly. I get woken up by extremely heavy breathing on the beach from something big in the area of my fire, but the tide was in now, so the waves would have covered it. My first thought is that it's a bear, but on the islands where I was, bears aren't common at all, to the point that there hasn't been one documented ever. This is blasting through my mind. The thought of Bigfoot also runs through my mind. At this point, I'm like, yeah, there's no such thing as Bigfoot, so what the hell is it? I gain my courage and open my tent. I shine my flashlight around for a bit, but I don't see anything, so get out of my tent. I am shining my light around when I hear it again. This huge breath followed by a small splash. I focus my light on the beach when I see a massive orca rolling around, and it's near my fire. This behemoth of a marine mammal scared the life out of me, but it turned into being an amazing thing. It's a massive animal just playing in front of me. I notice them just off the shore bobbing, probably half asleep. I still didn't sleep for the rest of the night. This happened when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. I have a sister who is 8 years younger than me, so she's about 1 or 2 at the time. During the summer months in Calgary, Canada, my family and another 3 or 4 families would frequently have barbecues out in Brownness Park. For those of you unfamiliar with Brownness Park, it's a very large public park in Calgary that has a lot of picnic areas, playgrounds and fountains for the kids to play at. The area is so large that you'd have to walk 5 or 10 minutes between playgrounds and picnic areas and bathrooms. So often us kids would have to leave the adults to go and play in the fountains on the playground, and it was generally safe enough that we never had any issues. I recall one time we went and we're playing in our bathing suits, when I see this tall guy with glasses and a large cowboy hat sitting on a bench outside of the fountain area just watching us. I was a naive kid who never had any prior talks about stranger danger or any of that stuff, and his cowboy hat made me automatically assume I'm dealing with a park ranger. After a couple of hours, we leave the fountains to eat with the adults. My babysitter announced she needs to use a bathroom. She was nearly potty trained at this point, but not completely. My mum says, can you go to the bathroom, which is like 10 minutes away. I just remember walking with them when a guy comes up and says hello, starting a conversation, wearing a cowboy hat. I again assume that he's another park ranger. He was asking for our names and ages, and overall had a very friendly demeanour. So our idiotic selves talk openly to him. I don't notice that he had a particular interest in my baby sister, and even at one point asked to hold her, but she's too fussy and wants to walk. This went on until we reached the bathrooms. We part ways and we go inside the bathroom. Now, this is when even my naive self started feeling like something's wrong. My sister ended up having an accident on herself, asking my friend to stay with her in the bathroom while I ran to get more clothes from my mum. When I stepped out of the bathroom, I found that same strange guy standing a couple of feet away from the bathroom, clearly waiting for something. That's when my alarm bells start going off. I ran back to the kitchen area and told my mum that I think some guy's following us, and she came with me to the bathroom. When the guy saw me with my mother approaching about 100 meters away, he booked it, power walking in the opposite direction as fast as possible without attracting any attention from anyone. At the time, I completely forgot about what happened. It wasn't until a couple of years later that I suddenly realized that the strange man was waiting for us. And it's the same guy who you approached just before pretending to be a park ranger. So I can only assume he's been waiting for hours and waited for us to leave the adults before approaching. Now this particular area doesn't even have park rangers. I have no idea what his true intentions were, but I'm so grateful I never had to find out.